Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, man, this is a Tuesday evening. You're listening to Ship Ashore Radio, and this is Frank and Dre. Want to say welcome to everyone, and just wanted to take a second to tell you a little bit about this special evening we have planned. We have the one and only Key West, Chris Ream, coming from the great island of Key West. We're going to have loads of other activities for you. I'm going to have a chance to also call in. But the most important thing for this evening is to remember that no matter where you are, no matter what you're doing, there couldn't be any better place for you to be than right here on Ship Ashore Radio on this evening. Now, we kind of took a vacation for a little while before. We tend to do things in seasons around here, and that seems to work out the best. And during each season, we have had the pleasure of having Key West Chris Ream on each edition, all the way back to when Ship Ashore Radio was part of the Flockers Gone Wild network, which it still is, however it is in different control now. And it sounds like I'm just killing time right now. It's because I actually am. Killing time is a peculiar thing. It happens every now and then when you have those dreaded technical difficulties, which we're having right now. It is not a result of Tropical Storm Debbie. It's a result of the internet. Anyone who has Verizon internet can tell you that from time to time you have these little issues. And right now, it's not a little issue. What we're doing is waiting for our server to load, and I'm not even certain at this exact time that you have me live. There's no idea if you can hear me right now. But that's what happens when you're broadcasting from an unknown ship someplace on land even. You just never know. We're going to be right to the point. I like Island Standard Time. And our interview is definitely on Island Standard Time this evening. So you guys will just keep hanging on just a little bit longer. We will make up for this little thing. And in fact, I think there's no reason to wait much longer. I think we're going to start the proceedings off by saying thanks for your patience. Some things we just cannot control. And this is not a recording. This is live and direct. Frank and Dredd, also known as Captain Frank and Dredd. And away we go.
tables and the bar, it's a new dawn. I see the water in the bay, glisten and shine. In the distance I hear a tug's horn, let out a whine. The girls all give a pretty smile. Streets are wet from the night before another drop of storm. Homeless still scatter the doorway, sleeping it off. Work in Duval rewards a sidewalk and a mile. glass to the other phony. But I'll raise my glass to the other phony.
You're listening to Ship to Shore Radio. Radio.
Good evening. Yes, indeed, we are live and direct at this particular time. Thanks for all the hanging out. I wanted everyone to have an opportunity to run to the fridge and grab a beer, or run to the cupboard and grab a spot of rum, you know? And sometimes when you're a pirate and you're stealing the airwaves, you have to like break through certain protocols and all that other stuff, and we've done that. So now I've been most eager all day to talk to a good friend who I've still yet to meet, but we're going to take care of that this year. Finally, Key West Chris Ream. How are you doing, Chris?
Hey, everything's good, Captain. How are you?
I am doing absolutely fabulous. The ship is sailing so nicely right now, and you know, it's good to nice up the airwaves with the sound of your music, which comes from, as we like to say here at Ship to Shore, the game-changing CD of the year from the year 2011.
That's right. Yeah, I like that. That's cool.
Yes, and here's the thing. It's not just the music that people are most enamored of you as a friend, as a correspondent on Facebook for the Great Island of Key West and so many other things, but it just certainly appears you're just a good fellow all the way around, and we like that.
Well, I try. the best thing you can do is just keep laughing and be nice to people. It's a simple formula. A lot of people have trouble grasping a hold of that, but that's really the way to live your life.
I think so. All this negativity instead of running around, there's no place for it, I don't think. And so remember their old commercial with Coke, a Coke and a smile?
I do remember that, yeah.
What happened to that very basic theory and formula for life? I don't know.
it's one of those things where the simplest things are really the answer.
I think so. And earlier this evening, got a chance just to exchange text messages back and forth, and I was doing this other thing, cooking, and I was at the time enjoying a nice cab from 1993 with a steak, and you were having a I guess a casual meeting with this young lady named Stella. Well, she's not a young lady, Stella. How was that meeting?
It was wonderful. I was actually there with my good friend, Cindy Hogan. She and her husband are dear friends of mine, and her husband does a lot of work out of town. He's out of town right now. So she and I met over at a place called McConnell's here in Key West and had a couple of beers, and her son was and his friend were there. They didn't drink beer. They were a little young for that, but they ran off and did their thing. And it was just a great time all the way around. Right now, I've switched over to 7 Tiki Rum.
Yeah, you're going to save some for me, right, till November? Or are you going to be able to? I'm going to be able to find it any place on the island.
I know where to find it.
That's good enough for me. And you have to, in change, have to try out Pirate Beer. It's a nice Belgian beer.
I think that's available. We have here on Key West. We have the last few years. 2 years. We had a place that opened called The Porch, which was opened by a guy named Chris Schultz, who a lot of people know Chris because he wrote a book several years back called Quit Your Job and Move to Key West. And now he owns this place called The Porch, and it was like the first craft bar for beer. And also he has fine wines there, too. And it's in a place called the Porto Mansion, which is absolutely beautiful. It's like from the 1840s, and it's haunted and all kinds of fun stuff. But I think they might have the pirate there, and I'll have to make a point of running over there in the next day or two and check it out, because they have about, I'm going to say they have about 150 different beers there. And since they opened, we've had several other places open that are kind of along the same theme.
That almost sounds like Belgium itself has 114 types. I'm sure it's the last time I was there, it might be 117 to 18 by now. But so from many days of going to Facebook, when no matter where you are and no matter where I've been, one of the first things that I've been alerted to is the wonderful forecast for Key West, whether it's raining and most times it's sunny, you get this wonderful outlook about that wonderful island from Key West Kiss, because your photos have adorned many backgrounds on computers, have been so many places, your music, just your sunny outlook. As you say, it's much better to keep a smile and be nice to people. But your unspoken way of doing that is just sharing with the world your view of Key West and the lifestyle, island time, as you like to call it. And for that, I have to tell you, for nearly everyone who's woken up with a smile, thank you very much for sharing everything that is you with everyone, and which includes mostly a point of view starting with Key West at Mile Zero.
Well, thank you. I'm glad it's working. One of the things I do, the reason they do that is because, you know, I'm not from here. I wasn't born here. I moved here out of choice. But when I did, I was fortunate because I didn't live all that far from the Conoco Public. Now, the Conoco Public, of course, goes from the Dry Tortugas through the Marquesas to Key West, through the Keys, all the way up to a place called the Last Chance Saloon, which is at the border of the Conoco Public in Florida City. And I used to live a little bit north of there, maybe about 15 miles north of there. And I would come down to the Keys, be it Key Largo, Isla Mirada, what have you, all the way to Key West, whatever it was. And what I would do is I would take as many pictures as I could, because it's such a scenic and beautiful place. And then I would download them to the computer that I had at work. And I, when work was just getting, like, pretty tough, I'd just click on one of those pictures for about, I don't know, 15, 20 seconds, a minute, and just get lost in there. And all of a sudden, I come out of it, and it was like a complete breath of fresh air. And that's why I do it, because I know there's a whole bunch of people out there that it helps them out in that way. It just gives them that breath of fresh air, and they say, ah, great. That's wonderful, you know, and sometimes people will say, why are you doing this to me? And but that's why I'm doing it. You know, most of the people just say they love it to death. But now and then you get somebody who doesn't quite get the concept, and they think I'm trying to give them a hard time, which is the opposite of what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to give them that breath of fresh air. So I'm glad it's working with so many people.
It's absolutely working in every way. And I got to tell you, it comes out in the music. And when people listen to Shanghai and Maroon and Key West, things could be much worse. You know, they get a feeling that they're actually there. And that has spurred so many other persons too, to be true to themselves. And the captain in particular, I must tell you, that also helps me without pause to just also spread the cheer of palm trees and sand. Otherwise, I may play a different style of music, reggae, but it's all about being yourself and making people smile. And as I told you before, the thing that, you know, I owe you one, because here I was, I thought I had like the perfect song and one of your bass lines, I told you it stuck. I thought I had the whole thing finished, and then I thought, wait a minute. I've been listening to that CD so many times, it's crept into my music. So I had to stop listening to your CD. But
that's such a nice compliment.
Believe me, because and you had such an all-star lineup playing on the CD that just the fact that bass line crept right in there, and my fingers started moving like that, it told me something very good. So let me ask you this question. Now that you've put out such a great CD, when are we going to get the follow-up?
Good question. I'm in the process of writing some songs right now. We already did one, and that was kind of like, all of a sudden, I had a gun to my head. My dear friend, Misty Loggins, she's a singer-songwriter, actress based out of Nashville. she called me back in November, like middle of November, and she said, with her heavy, heavy, beautiful southern Georgia accent, she goes, "Hey, Chris, I'm going to be down there in 2 weeks. We're going to be playing for Smoking Tuna." And I said, that sounds fantastic, Missy. I said, let's cut a song together. And she said, I'd love that. So I hung up, and all of a sudden I realized I didn't have a song for her, because Misty's a country singer, and I can write country. I've done it a lot, but I didn't have anything that fit her style. So with the gun to my head, all of a sudden I sat down and tried to write something, and it was just like running into the wall. And then all of a sudden I hit two chords and it clicked, and all of a sudden the song went off, and we went off to the races, and it turned out really well. And Misty came down and she just nailed it to the wall. And as a matter of fact, I think it's her mom's favorite song, or at least it's her mom's favorite song that I wrote, but I know she really loves the song a lot. And, So I know I must have done something right, but that's the first song of the next album. And, you know, like I say, I'm working on some other songs. We have a song called Yippie Cayueso. Cayueso is the Spanish name, which it had originally before the English came here. And the English heard the name Cayueso, and they thought it meant Key West. It actually translates to Bone Key, because when the Spanish first came here, they found all these human bones on the island. Just scattered about on the beach. So they named it Bone Key, is what they named it. That's how it translates. But the English thought it meant Key West, because it sounds very similar. Cayueso, it's a Western Key, you know. So, but in any case, the name of the song is Yippie Cayueso, kind of like Yippie Cayaway. So we got that song. I got another song called Happy Hour. And I'm also resurrecting some songs that I had written a few years ago. I have a bossa nova that I had, and we're working on some other stuff, but I'm hoping maybe in the fall we'll be getting to record it again.
Well, when are you going to write some reggae?
You know, I wrote a reggae song on Gary X's boat. I wrote a reggae song, and I should dig that thing up, because it was kind of a fun song. I couldn't recite it to you or anything right now, because I don't remember. It's been years now. But no, I can do a reggae song, sure.
Well, I'm going to force you to do that. You're going to spend at least a couple hours with me in November. We'll see.
That sounds like a plan. And, you know, being as you're going to be down here in November, maybe that's when we'll do some recording.
Yeah, you know, that's hopefully, I was hoping you were going to say that, because I certainly missed out on the opportunity on the last disc, but I tell you, anything you want, Chris, we're certainly going to make the time for you.
Now, are you coming down with your pants?
Oh, absolutely. The fans, anytime I travel, they have to absolutely go with me, no doubt about it. In fact, that's one of the main reasons they have to go with me. We haven't had an opportunity to do something together, so it's about that time. It's about that time. It's overdue,
actually. Well, I'll tell you what, I have a song that I wrote 100 years ago that I'm bringing back. It's just, at this point, it's an instrumental, and it may stay an instrumental. And it's
right.
It's like a Brazilian jazz type of thing. But I was thinking that In the instrumental improvisational point, pans might really be a neat twist for that. You know, having that Brazilian rhythm and having some pans playing on it, I think that would be really cool.
That kind of scares me when you say a neat twist, because I think absolutely that's something that I would definitely welcome, especially with Brazilian style of music. But just any style that you would like to check out. And in fact, the Stefan Grappelli that you gave me was absolutely wonderful. It's not not conk rock, but it's good music, which one of the reasons we so easily gravitate into a conversation on music is because music is such a large portion of both of our lives, to where if anyone knows anything about Key West Chris, when he has his guitar and he's on stage, you're going to get something wonderfully musically. And he's actually the person. I'm going to tell you one little story here. It's very short. I was, maybe it was a year ago. It was just about a year ago when I was still living in Chicago. I called Chris because I was going to try and get him to play guitar on something of mine. And I sat there and I played the guitar, even over the phone, and he says, "What do you need me for?" And I was thinking,
because you're Chris Reed. And he told me I didn't. So I promptly, when we got off the phone, I ended up practicing for 6 hours. So I have to tell you that probably one of the largest reasons why the knives and spatulas and stuff and my chef's clothes are like a afterthought is because you really kind of like influenced me to get back into songwriting and to start performing again, and slowly but surely it's happening. But I can sincerely say that it's large in part to the conversations we've had and that one moment where everyone has the confidence shaken sometimes, but for me, here I was very honest. I said, you know, I'd love for Chris to play, and then you're saying that. But here we are, hoping that your next CD that you put out is going to go worldwide. Why? Because the whole world needs to hear it. By and large, the right people are beginning to hear it now. I notice you have Hollywood producers and things like the people who have produced. Person says, I don't remember the producer's name. Someone who produced.
Yeah, Shelley Leibowitz. Yeah, Shelley
yes.
Leibowitz really liked the album. And he produced Miles Davis. He produced Ella Fitzgerald, Dr. John, Maria Muldaur. There's a long list of people that he produced. And I got a letter from him saying, just a brief thing, saying, hey, Chris, and this is from Los Angeles, and here I am in Key West. And he said, hey, Chris, I loved your music. It made me felt like I was back in the Keys. I mean, what more could you ask for than that?
Yeah, and I think he's really credible because he's in a place that has sand and palm trees, too.
Well, true, yeah. But, you know, you mentioned when you started about the Stefan Grappelli thing. I'm about 90% done with the song, which is in that marvelous mode of music, which is like the Parisian jazz of Stefan Grappelli and Django Reinhardt of pre-World War II and post-World War II in that area from Paris, and it has a very French-sounding feel to it. And my song is the song I'm writing for that. It's in that same genre, but we're going to tropicize it because, you know, with all cock rock, prop rock, whatever you'd like to, whichever you're talking about, none of it is really, actually very, very little of it is something that somebody like pulled out of the air and all of a sudden you have new music like, you know, in the 50s, you know, Elvis comes out and he starts playing what becomes rock and roll. All the music that I'm playing has its roots somewhere else. And I think with most of us, that's the case. One of the things I love to do is bring in other forms of music into the punk rock, prop rock genres that isn't ordinarily there. And a lot of people said, like with The Beach, which is Afro-Cuban and it has the clarinet in it, which Marty Stoneley just did a fantastic job on. But, you know, that's something that one of the big prop rock DJs, you know, he just loves it, Jeff Allen. And he says, I couldn't believe it when I heard the clarinet and how well it worked. And that's what I like to do. I like to bring in new stuff, you know, and on the CD of ours that we put together, there's not one song that falls into the same root genre. Everything's a little bit different. There's country and there's the Afro-Cuban and there's Brazilian and there's Bahamian and all that stuff. And the one thing I hate about listening to a CD is if I listen to somebody's CD, no matter how good it is, if everything kind of has that same feel, after the third song, I get bored with it. So I don't want that to be that's like the cardinal sin for me. I don't want anything to sound to the point where somebody's going to say, this all sounds the same. You know, you don't want to have that. So in any case, I have this one, I'm trying to remember the name for it, the jazz that they do, and I'm going to give that a tropical feel, and maybe we'll stick you on there, because that would just be something completely different, you know, having like a Parisian jazz from the 30s and 40s with a steel drum on there, you know, that would be completely off the wall, and I think it would sound fantastic.
You know, I'm really all for it. And then in return, I have something that I might want you to do too. I was thinking about redoing Now, you guys, I'm sure people christened, well, Chris and I are a little older but yet young. They're just the same, but there was a show called Green Acres. And I decided that I want to do a pan version of Green Acres.
You know, it's funny you mention that because I play a guitar version of that and I know all the lyrics.
Oh,
I don't know if you want, I don't know if you want lyrics on it, but I can play the song either way. What
that
key
would
do you do it in?
I haven't even decided the key yet. That's the thing, because on pan, there are certain keys you like to really work around. I mean, I play all the keys, but just the fact that that is just something that I absolutely have to do, that will be fun. And if you, here we are. We're producing out right now some type of joint thing, I think.
Exactly. And I think doing Green Acres would be hysterical.
I think so too, and I like the arrangement, and just pan wise, I think it'd be a whole hell of a lot of fun.
Oh, it would be, yeah, absolutely.
You mentioned the beach earlier, and I think it's kind of funny that as the evening was progressing, I was going to play some more music of yours because that's what it's all about in the end. Because sometimes where words fail, music is the answer. So right now I'm going to share Chris Ream's The Beach, and you guys, that's where I think we all would like to be, and that's where Chris takes you every day. And just by the way, if you haven't had an opportunity to become a Facebook friend with Chris, you can find him at Key West Chris Ream or Key West Chris. Just put those
things in. Key West Chris, because the whole reason I use Key West Chris is because my last name is a weird spelling of a German name, and nobody can spell it right. They hear it one way. So if you just put a search in for Key West Chris, my last name will pop up with it, and that will happen.
That's good enough for me. And so let's let Chris take us to the beach. You're listening to Ship to Shore Radio. This is Captain Frank and Dredd with Key West Chris.
Cool.
Thanks for listening.
Need to run.
beach, where's a smile and the good times have begun. Don't stand by the window, I'm the phone to be talking. Get off of that computer and be on my way. Life's a waste and time's too precious, better start walking.
Ship to Shore Radio with Captain Frank and Dredd.
Yes, and this particular evening, Captain Frank and Dredd is not the most important thing because actually I am retired. I am just sitting down inside of my stateroom enjoying life because things are in perfect control. The good ship Flocker is going wild, is sailing nicely, and also the good ship, which is actually just mooring on the side, we have Ship to Shore Radio, which is, as a matter of fact, has been such a labor of love. And one of the things that has made it such a lovely venture has been good radio friends and friends from afar like Key West Chris. I tell you, it's been a great year, man. And I'm looking forward to November because you remember at one point we were planning to do a conk rock radio show together.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I'm thinking since, and everyone here as well, there's no backing out this time. Since I will be there, I think November is when we should debut the first one. That's what I think.
It's good with me.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking live, a live conk rock radio show, and people don't understand what that's going to be about. It's about exposing and forwarding and the music. But I tell you what, it's best for me to let people tell you what conk rock is from, I think, I would call him the ambassador, or better yet, the facilitator of conk rock music, that is Key West Chris.
Well, the only thing I did was name it. That's all I did. It was always here. It was here long, long, long before I was here. And there's all kinds of, you know, different people who are playing it, and they might not even, most of them don't even know they are playing it, but it's just music that's indigenous of the Keys.
Yeah, and the thing is, you've sent me quite a few artists and things to check out, and more I hear artists invoking Key West. In fact, last week we had Danny Hoy on, and she had a song called Drunk in Mallory Square and several songs about Key West, which seems to be the point of reference for all trop rock artists. But to you, I say all tropical artists who like to indulge in the island life.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, it all revolves around the islands. And in fact, as you like island time, I like to call it island standard time.
That's good. Yeah, that's excellent.
I mean, who needs Eastern and Central and Pacific? Just call it island time, which means soon come and all those things. I mean, you look at the way that people live in Key West, and this was a thing at the very beginning. We were always talking about Key West, and a band used to play there at least four times a year for about a five-year stretch at Sloppy Joe's back in the 90s. But the thing was, as much as I love Jamaica and the Caribbean islands, no one has done, yes, I'm saying this because it's true, no one has done a better job of just waking up every day and being themselves and promoting Key West and conk rock and music and island time from what I'm seeing right now than Key West Chris. That's what I think.
Oh, well, thank you, Captain. I appreciate that. That's something nice to hear.
And that's what I like about you, because you wake up, I don't foresee you sitting up and writing a list of things that you want to do to make the world see your point of view. I think you're just living your life, and people care to follow and to delve deeper, they can, but you make yourself accessible to the world. And for that, we're all grateful. I know that I am.
That's awfully nice to hear. Thank you so much. I'm just having fun. That's it. You know, just having fun and trying to share my life with everybody.
So let's talk a little bit more about your life. Let's talk about a typical week for you. Yes, that's right. So let's talk about Monday through Sunday.
Oh, geez.
Now, this isn't going to be such a broad thing. How often would you say that you're able to pick up your guitar and play? 7 days a week, five, three or four?
Yeah, I play every day. Absolutely. It's not always something that, it's not like I have to kick myself in the ass to do. I'll just pick it up. The biggest deterrent I have in the world against the guitar and songwriting is just messing around on the computer, because, you know, we all know you get on the computer and you start playing around, and next thing you know, 4 hours have transpired. So I have to make sure I'm not on the computer, and the best thing for me to do in that case is turn it off as opposed to just shut everything down, because if you turn it off, it takes, you know, several minutes for it to fire up. But my most creative time is usually first thing in the morning.
How did you know that was the next question? Because that's the thing. Being creative, a lot of times when you're heading to sleep, it's turned around several times at both of us. Sometimes you're out and about Key West and checking live musicians out, and then you're ready to hit the hay, and I end up text messaging each other, and you're heading in, and I'm all fired up, ready to write music, and I'm all into it, and then next thing I know, the next morning comes, and we have to catch up then. But so for you, the morning is the most productive time, and I would have to say right now, nighttime is the most productive for me. So, but it's this thing, you remember ever hearing about how they said the music, whenever you're practicing it, that they say 20 minutes at a time is the best way to go about it. Do you believe in that?
No. I mean, that's a theory, and maybe it's a right one. I don't know. But for me, particularly if I'm writing, it was really funny because I recently saw an interview with Keith Richards on YouTube, and he explained exactly the same exact theory that I've always had. And hearing Keith Richards saying that he's been doing it for 40-some-odd years made me say, okay, good. I'm on the same page as Keith Richards. I must be doing something right. But for me, what it is if I'm in the zone where I'm writing, and it's the songs are out there. They're floating around somewhere out there. And all I am is a receiver. I'm like a dish, and it comes into me. And when it happens, it might happen in I one of the longest songs I ever wrote. I couldn't write the words down fast enough. They're just being fed to me really fast. Other times it's a little bit slow, but if you're in the zone and you're getting that feed, if you will, then it might be 20 minutes, it might be an hour and a half, it might be 2 hours. It, you know, in the other case where I wrote that long song, I wrote like one of the longest songs I ever wrote, and I wrote that one in 20 minutes. So I wouldn't put a time limitation on it or anything like that. I'm just open to whatever it is. If it's being given to me, I'm going to take it.
Yeah, that songwriting thing, it can catch you in all kind of ways. And I have to say, there's a lot of changes. You and I have often talked about recording gear and how things have changed too. Like for you, when you write these songs at home, here's the question. In what way are you able to get it down? Do you put it down on tape? Do you use a recorder? Or do you chart it out? What works best for you?
Well, you know, I've recently, and when I say recently, I'm talking like the last month and a half, found I had this great device which enabled me not, like, if I sat down at my computer where I have my, I have what they call a Cubase, which is one of the recording systems that you can use. If I do that, there's always some type of a glitch going on. And, you know, you turn it on one day and it does this. You turn it on the other day and it does that. And you have to sit down and figure it out. In doing that, if you're in the middle of writing something, it throws the whole thing off kilter. All of a sudden, you've lost that brainwave that you had that we're talking about where the songs are floating out and you're just receiving it. Well, because you're focused on saying, you know, well, what the heck's wrong with this thing? Why isn't it working today? You know, what's the problem here? And I say Cubase, but it's going to be any recording system that you have. It always comes up with some kind of a thing. And so I just said, the hell with that. And I realized I have an iPhone. And I've had an iPhone for a couple of years now. And I just realized that the damn thing can record what I'm doing. Now, it's not going to be, by any means, anything that you could record and, you know, send to a radio station per se. No, because that's just absurd. But what it does is it saves the idea. And you say, oh, yeah, I forgot. You know, you go back to it. If you didn't finish the whole thing, I can go back to it, you know, in a week and just go through the stuff and say, oh, gee, I had that thing going. You know, I forgot all about it, which is typical for me because I have a brain like a sieve. So that is probably my newest and favorite tool. And then later on, you know, we'll go into recording the thing properly. But that is a really good tool for me because I can just, like I say, I just push the button, play the song or play the part of the song or whatever it is, push the button and it stops and it's there and I've got it.
Well, here's the thing, too, about songwriting. I just wanted to throw this one, while it's on my mind, throw this one out there. On a radio interview, because I'm going someplace with this, and it ties in, but what is the craziest question that you've ever gotten that you can remember about songwriting on air, or just someone asked you about songwriting can you remember at all when someone asked you about songwriting and the answer was maybe obvious to you and not to them?
You know, it's probably what we touched on before about the songs just floating out in outer space and all of a sudden you just receive them from the atmosphere. I think that's the thing that surprises a lot of people. And, you know, everyone has their talents. You know, somebody might be a great accountant. Somebody else might be a great surgeon. Somebody else might be a great lawyer. My talent is being able to harness these things or just receive them as they come in. And it doesn't happen all the time. You know, a lot of times you just be, it's not like I set out to do it. Usually it's quite by accident. I'll hit a wrong chord or something and say, boy, that thing sounds good. And next thing you know, I'm off to writing a song. So it's just a mystery. But it's a really cool thing.
You know, where I was going with that, probably the shortest and sweetest answer to the craziest question I ever received was, so how do you become a songwriter? And without thinking, I quickly said, write a song, which is basically true in a lot of ways, too. So
yeah.
Then you, I mean, it is subjective, but to me, the whole world is a song. Everyone's experience is a song. It's music. It's something to be shared. Some people enjoy to listen to music. Some people enjoy writing music. Some enjoy playing it. And some like to do all of it combined. And I believe that that's you. You like to hear the music. As you say, receive it and share it. See, that's the thing. I look at the songs that you write, and if I were to close my eyes, what I get is you're sharing the wonderful qualities of music and of life through song and through your compositions. And to me, that's, as a songwriter and as an artist and as a musician, that is the one thing that so many are unable to do. You have people who love to play bards, people who love to go out and have their name on the marquee, but if there's one thing that I can say that maybe no one has ever said about your music, is that when I hear your music, I hear an honesty there. I don't hear that you're writing for a contract or anything else. Anything that ever happens to you in your career, I believe, will happen because you're being sincere and honest with yourself and what comes out through your music, and people can hear that. People can hear.
Good to know that, yeah.
And I can tell you that I've never heard one negative comment about your CD.
Well, that's good. <here.
laughs> Oh, actually, I have. That is, where's the next one? Everybody wants to. And that's not negative. That's positive, actually.
That's positive, yeah. That's awfully nice to hear. Yeah. And the funny thing is that all I did was write the songs and did the arrangements, but the credit for how good the CD sounds goes to all the players and the producer, Dan Simpson, who was just marvelous, and he's a joy to work with. And I would recommend anybody who's thinking of doing a CD to come to Key West and do it with Dan Simpson, because he's such a great guy and just a beautiful guy to work with. He's what's the word I could say for him? He's one of the things that his wife told me, Melody Cooper, she said, one thing you'll find about Dan is that he's extremely honest. And he is. And if Dan doesn't like something, he'll come right out and say, no, that doesn't sound right because this, that, and the other thing. But on the flip side of it, this is an analogy that I always give out. When we were making the CD, up to that point, in Dan's 30-some-odd-year career of recording people for originally records and then now CDs, the most tracks he had ever used was like 21, 22. Others, I heard other reports earlier, like 18, but somewhere thereabouts on one. That was really pushing it for Dan. But we got up to like 22. And I said to him, I said, well, why don't we add this? And Dan would like cock his head to the side and look at me out of the corner of his eye and he'd like give me a sneer. And he'd say, really? I said, let's just try it. He said, okay. The thing is that when we did something like that, Dan was not in favor of doing it. However, when he heard it, he said, yeah, that sounds good. He didn't put his pride ahead of him, which so many people would do. You know, it's not, there's no, with Dan, there's no gavel that says, boom, this is the rule. And ironically enough, on like the song that you played earlier, The Beach, I think there's over 70 different tracks on that particular song. So we buried his thing. But and the funny thing was with him was it got to the point where he's saying, well, let's add this, let's add that. So, but that's he's such a great producer, and I'm thrilled to have worked with him, and I'm looking forward to working with him again. We had worked a year prior to that, and we did three songs. I was thinking of putting them on the CD originally, but what it was with those three songs, we didn't have any percussion. We had a song called Life on My Terms. We had another song called Garrison Bite. And we had another song, which is kind of my signature song, called Little Board. But we didn't have percussion on those songs. And we did it with a good friend of mine, George Wood, on keyboards, and Dan played bass. And they really turned out well, but because they didn't have the percussion on them, there's no drums, nothing. It just didn't work fitting with the rest of the songs that we did for the CD. But so Dan and I have had a fair amount of work together, and I'm looking forward to doing it again with him. It's really great. And, you know, if you cut a song with us, you'll be cutting it with Dan.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that or not. No, like, the thing is, I'm looking forward to him helping me find the most awesome steel pan song, because I finally, first of all, I have a really great microphone. And a set of phone microphones, actually, I think, will make the pans really come out. But just the engineering and production on your CD tells me that perhaps working with Dan Simpson, they're never going to sound any better than they will after he's put his hand on it.
Yeah, that's for certain. You know, we also put in other tracks as well. And what Dan would do is he would go online. On one of the songs we did, a song called Beautiful Day Down Paradise Way, which is a jazz song, there's a great jazz player in town, Mike Emerson. He has, I don't know if you're familiar with gear or anything like that, but he's got a 1973-74 guitar called a Gibson 400, and it's a big jazz guitar, and it just sounded fantastic. And Dan went online, he found all these different tones to use with it. It just made it sound perfect. And in the end, he just nailed it. And that's what he did with everything. He was just unbelievable.
Well, I tell you that, again, just how clean the recording is also. I mean, at one time I asked you, wow, and I said to you, well, we will not discuss prices here, but you told me this, and I was thinking, you know what, it might be worth cooking a little while longer to be able to get Dan Simpson to put his hand on it, because and I first heard about Dan Simpson from Gary Eck. He was telling me how from the old days of analog and live recording and as things go into more of a digital age, that there's just some things Dan really seems as if he knows all about equipment. In fact, that at one point I was getting there was a recorder that I had bought, and I was thinking it probably wasn't any good, and Gary Eck talked to Danny, and Danny ended up, as he calls him, Danny Simpson, and so you do too. Turns out he had the same identical recording device, and I was able to figure out how to do some things with it as well. Fortunately, it died, but the thing was, that's what you get for getting secondhand equipment sometimes. But he's so knowledgeable just to be in the studio with such a esteemed producer.
You know, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. When you have somebody, you know, it's one thing if, you know, I make a record or you make a CD and, you know, we go to a friend next door and, you know, he knows a good deal about engineering and stuff, and he does the CD for us. But and you'll hear a lot of stuff that's you know, well produced on the trap rock or punk rock radio stations. However, I don't know anything that is as well produced, and this, I can say this because I didn't produce it. Dan produced it. I don't think there's anything out there that received an accolade as strong as, going back to what we were talking about earlier, Shelley Leibowitz, who produced Miles Davis, Ella Fitzgerald, Dr. John, you know, the list goes on and on. Someone of that caliber who came out and said, took the time out to write me from Los Angeles and say, Chris, I love your album. That is a testimony to the production quality that Dan Simpson did. It really is. Just, you know, that's really the bottom line, because that's what he is. You know, they're doing the same job, and you have somebody on that level who says, I love your album. That says it all.
Yes, it does, and that did not go unnoticed by me either. The sound quality. I would have to say, as soon as the beat started, it only took me about 5 seconds to say, "Holy crap!"
Yeah.
And here's another angle. We've been talking about recording and all those things, but let's talk about live performances. You really get around quite a bit as much as possible, but no matter what we may record or what songs we write, inevitably, if we like to play live and play for people, the people who seem to always drag us back a bit, who try to steal our soul, are club owners sometimes, club and restaurant owners and bar owners. Man, what's wrong with them? Not everyone, but the ones that I'm talking about. What happened? What's wrong with those folks?
Oh, I don't know. You know, I think that one of the biggest problems with these people is that, for starters, they're bar managers, and they do their job as bar managers well. What they're not is they're not musicians. Their music is like part of their job. It's a burden for them to do, and it's not something they really know all that much about. And on top of that, in their defense, a lot of the people they deal with are these people called musicians, and musicians can be yourself excluded, myself excluded, but there's a lot of really big flakes out there, and they don't know which end is up. They don't know how to run a business. They don't know any of this stuff. They're just, "Hey, man, let me play the guitar," you know? So they have to deal with people like that. So there's a lot of negative things. I mean, I went into a place 2 weeks ago, and the guy was there. He was fixing a glass cabinet, and he's sitting on the floor, and they sent me over to him. He was the bar manager, and he's doing his thing, you know, but he wouldn't even look up at me. And I'm trying to, like, you know, give him a good pitch. I mean, you know, I was one of four songwriters in Key West out of 140 songwriters that were here from Nashville. I was one of the four that were in the Songwriters Fest, which is a strong credential. I was there with my friend Bobby D, who, he's been an endorser for many, many products for 25 years on guitar stuff. And the guy barely even looked at us, you know. So what do you do?
Yeah, that reminds me, you brought up Bobby D. So how's that new duo, Keys Disease, going?
Well, unfortunately, we hit a snag. Bobby had some commitments that just popped up, and he's leaving town tomorrow. So looks like Chris is going to be soloing for a little bit longer, which is really disappointing because it was something we've been hoping to put together for the last 2 years, but he's got to take care of some issues.
Understandable. And I tell you, I have to go back to this bar manager and restaurant manager issue. I can tell you, and I know you know Scott Allen, the island doctor, the shot doctor, very well.
Of course, yeah.
We were just talking last night about how I won't say the area of the United States, and it is in the United States, nor what city, but we're both dealing with a place who has an 18-year-old who just graduated from high school in charge of a major restaurant, tavern, / bar, all three. It's a very large place. An 18-year-old who's responsible for hiring entertainment and all the details. I mean, really?
Exactly.
So, and then I will have to say, too, that then you hear about musicians who have contracts with places, and then they go and they play. They've done their job. They promoted, done all the good stuff, and you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, at the end of the night, the guy, A, says to you, "Well, I decided I'm only going to pay you, say, $200 out of the $400 I owe you." Or worse yet, they tell you that the rest of your 7 or 8 dates for the summer, it's not going well for him. He doesn't say anything about your musicality or otherwise, or your show or presentation. He says, says to you, "Well, I'm not going to do any more dates." And you have a signed contract. It's times like that
you either you have to have thick skin and you have to just roll with the punches to be an act professional musician. And you can't stop for one moment. Either music's in you or not. There are times, even in relationships, where music just takes over. And sometimes you feel like you're married to music and you're cheating on it with someone of blood, sweat, and tears. Someone who's sweating out, doing their things, and then when they have time to spend with you, a song comes up and you need to write it or you need to record. And it's a tough thing. Being a musician is not easy at all.
No,
not one iota.
You're absolutely right. And matter of fact, I mentioned those three songs that we recorded 2 years ago. Actually, now it's 3 years ago. That we did not put on the CD, and I recorded them with a guy by the name of George Wood, who's a great, great keyboard player. And George is, I'm gonna peg George to be in his early 60s, and he was telling me, now this is 3 years ago, but nothing's changed. He was telling me, he said, you know, he goes, I was playing back in the late 60s, and I'm making the same money tonight, today, you know, when he plays out tonight, that he did in 1969.
Isn't that pathetic?
Yeah. On the same token, you know, it's hard to argue with because, you know, fortunately in Key West there's a big market for live music. Not everywhere there is, but in Key West there is. But nevertheless, you know, you have a 5-piece band. Everyone's going to be making 100, 125 a night. So the place is going to be putting out, you know, $600, $700, something like that. It has to make sense for them too. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword, I guess.
Yeah, and that whole thing, the practice of undercutting. I'm going to step right out there and say something right now that is really on my mind, and that is for, and I know all musicians, you have bills, you have to pay for your car, you have all these things, you have to eat, you may have families, but I tell you, one of the things that just absolutely gets underneath my dreadlocks is when you have your whole thing presentable, you've played so many places, you've traveled the globe or otherwise, you've recorded, people genuinely love that you're coming across so honestly to them, and they're dancing, they're smiling, and they're happy, and you just want to share the music with the people, and then all of a sudden you go to a place and you tell them your fee, and the guy says to you, well, I can get someone who will play for $300 less than that. And then that, hence the undercut. If there's one thing,
yeah,
and I know what you're saying, that absolutely chaps my blood when someone comes in and undercuts on a gig for such a significantly smaller amount that in the end, the club owner, manager, or otherwise, or whoever's in charge, they all of a sudden believe that, wow, why should I pay this money when there's someone who will do it? I mean, I actually had a guy tell me in Atlanta that he would put two monkeys fornicating out on the stage if people came in and paid money to see it. And so, therefore, entertainment, it didn't matter who he had entertaining as long as it was the cheaper version of it.
Yeah. Well, I used to play with a dear friend of mine. His name is Brewster Kell. And he and I started, he was probably in the, like, 97 or so, 96, 97, something like that is when we started. And we started out just as a duo, and Bruce played harmonica. I played guitar. And Bruce was a very, very successful person in not one but two fields. He had an he still does. He has an advertising company, and he does public speaking. And he, like I say, he's extremely successful. He has about 60 people in his advertising company that he owns and all that. But Bruce was very adamant. You know, we would be looking for gigs, and he would be very adamant saying, you know what, we get whatever the market is. We're not going to undercut anybody because that screws things up for everybody. And he goes, and that's not good, because Bruce was cognizant of the fact that, you know, there are guys, he wasn't doing this for a living. He was doing it for fun, and, you know, there's the added icing on the cake that you get paid at the end of the day. If he didn't get paid, it wasn't like the lights were getting turned off in his house the next day. But he knew that there were people that would happen to. And he was very, very adamant about just going for whatever the rate is. We're not going to We're not going to undercut anybody. You know, if they want us, they want us. If they don't, they don't. But you know, we're going at whatever the current rate is that everybody's doing.
Well, there's the other thing about what you have to work against in Key West. There are an awful lot of musicians walking around with acoustic guitars who like to do the one-man thing, and sometimes it just gets oversaturated in the fact that they, no matter, sometimes without ever hearing you, they look at your photo and they see that you're carrying as your weapon, so to speak,
yeah,
an acoustic guitar, and automatically they already know that they're only going to pay X amount of money. I mean, if Jimi Hendrix were down in Key West and came up with an acoustic guitar, it doesn't really matter. Well, I can't really say that, but I guess my point is, some people, you don't really get as good an opportunity when so many people are doing so much of the same things, at least in their mind. It gives you, it doesn't give you an opportunity to get your point of view across in terms of music. They feel like they've heard one guy on the acoustic guitar, they've heard them all. So you
run
into that much.
One of the things that, yeah, that's one of the things, you know, I've talked to a bunch of people about, whether they're from here or from somewhere else. And, you know, you always have these people that want to hear the same songs. They want to hear Brown Eyed Girl. You know, they want to hear, and I have nothing against Brown Eyed Girl, but I don't play it. Somebody says, do you play Brown Eyed Girl? And this is, again, something else I got from my friend Bruce, who I was just talking about. Bruce said, look, you know, what we'll do is if somebody asks us if we play, you know, a song like, you know, Brown Eyed Girl, we say, no, but we play this other song by Van Morrison. And you know what? That works. It works really well. And that way you're not sounding like the same thing that everybody else does, you know. No matter where they go, they're going to hear the same stuff, and that way you sound different. It works out well.
Let me ask you, have you ever had a meltdown when someone came and bothered you about a song?
No.
Okay.
I
have actually, I won't call it a meltdown per se, but can tell you. And the thing about playing predominantly the style of, well, playing reggae, not predominantly, but that's my thing. There's a song by, well, it was written by Neil Diamond, but by UB40, Red, Red Wine.
Right.
There's a thing that went back all the way to the 90s, a track this thing, and that was once, whether it was in the band, trio, or solo, once that song had been played 1,000 times, it's never playing that song again. So it had reached 1,000th time, and a woman came up at a place called CJ's Landing in Atlanta and just insisted that I play Red, Red Wine or else. I want to hear the song. She kept saying, I want to hear the song. So I told her 1 second, and I walked back to my briefcase and pulled out a CD. It just happened to be UB40 because I was doing radio and I wanted to take it to the station to play other songs. And I went over to it and I said, here you go. Here's Red, Red Wine. That's the only time where I've come very close to a meltdown, but that does happen. Brown Eyed Girl, you're probably not going to hear me play that tune either, and I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, no, I don't play it myself.
Yeah. Wow.
I back
scary.
People up playing it. I back people up playing it. You know, I know how to play it. I don't. You know, I've never sung it before myself. I know how to. I know the chords, but I don't know how to play it. I mean, I don't know how to sing it. I get the words all mixed up.
Well, I have this wonderful thing about that song. Van Morrison did such a wonderful job on it, I think I'll leave it to him.
Yeah, there you go. That's good. Excellent request.
Yeah. So we've been sitting here having such a nice conversation. I think just for about a minute I have some station breaks, and then we'll be right back. We'll be closing down here soon, but in the meantime, just a little of the islands coming to you, the Caribbean islands. You're listening to Ship to Shore Radio. This is Captain Frank and Dredd with Key West Chris. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Ship to Shore Radio with Captain Frank and Dredd. Shift to Shore Radio.
Shift to Shore Radio.
Shift to Shore Radio. Shift to Shore Radio.
Shift to Shore Radio.
Yeah, so, Chris, another thing that people may not know about you, because sometimes people know only what they want to know, but I had this occasion not too long ago that we were having a conversation about something else in your life that gives you a lot of joy, especially on some Sundays. Do you know where I'm headed with this?
I have a suspicion, but I'm not sure.
Okay, well,
I think it has, like, with four wheels.
I think it does. And with that in mind, we'll share everyone what that is in about 1 minute and 22 seconds.
All right.
You're listening to Ship to Shore Radio. Radio.
It's time for
Dreaded Sports Talk.
Indeed, don't turn that dial. This is Captain Frank and Dredd along with Chris Ream as we offer our own perspectives, not in a professional way, about IndyCar. Yes, you were absolutely correct, Chris.
I guess that one right.
So I was actually shocked because one of the things we've never talked about, the things like baseball, football, and all those things, they don't particularly catch your fancy, but the one thing that you are partial to is IndyCar.
Yeah, IndyCars and also Formula One, the Grand Prix, which are they're both open-wheel race cars and very different, although to the outsider, somebody who doesn't never seen them or, you know, just see them superficially, they look pretty similar. But those two series are my favorite series, yeah. I like NASCAR, which is the most popular sport as far as auto racing in this country goes, but I get bored with it after about four or five races. I like the Daytona 500. I like it when they go to the Brickyard at Indy. But IndyCars, I really love, and Formula One I really love. And we just had one of the best Formula One races in years. They're having a fabulous season this year. They've had, after the first six races, they finally had a repeat winner. So they're having a really exciting series there. And IndyCars doing great, too.
Well, what did you think about Danica Patrick sneaking over to the Nationwide Series and NASCAR? What did you think about that exodus?
Well, at first I thought it might take something away from IndyCar as far as their media focus. However, in the end, it didn't at all. They're doing as well as they've ever done in the recent years. Not. Like 16, 17 years ago, they were doing much better, but that's a whole story unto itself there. But it hasn't hurt them at all. As a matter of fact, they're getting better publicity now than they did before. The guy who's replacing her, as far as the sponsorship goes, she's sponsored by GoDaddy, a guy named James Hinchcliffe, is hysterical. He's got a fabulous sense of humor, funny as anything. And he does these videos, which they're just really, really good. And so he's a really good promotional guy for GoDaddy also. So that compensates. He's not nearly as good-looking as Danica. I'll give that to her.
Well, you know, I've always been partial to the Penske teams, so I'll just throw that right out there.
Yeah.
But, and my favorite driver, though, is Dario Franchitti. So, I mean, Elio, I've always watched him race, and I've always enjoyed things, but Dario, he's a daring, young, strapping lad, you know, and I like it. And if it sounds very crazy that the captain would like Indy racing, well, just the fact that I was born in NASCAR country, didn't pay a whole lot of attention because everyone knows all that racing and everything came out of basically the old moonshiners saga of how they used to outrun the police cars and things to run shine, and that's how the whole thing kind of got started. But then you look at Indy and Formula One and all of those things. And a lot of people thinking, how in the world could you sit and watch a race all afternoon? Well, can you explain that one? What is it about IndyCar that attracts you to it, Chris?
Well, I think the most exciting race in the world, inevitably, no matter what series you're looking at, is the Indianapolis 500. There is so much, you know, you have some people who like knock it down and say, oh, well, you know, you just got to make it to the end, and then it's the last 15 laps that count. Well, yeah, but you've got to stay on the same lap. You've got to have the right tire strategy. You've got to have the right fuel strategy. You've got to keep yourself in the front group. Now and then somebody, I mean, there have been all kinds of really great stories over the years where, I mean, Rick Mears is one of my favorite drivers of all time. He went down a lap and he ended up catching the lap back up and winning the race one year. That race is the most exciting race in the world for me, and it's full of pomp and pageantry and tradition. It's been going on since 1909. It's just, and they, you know, you always have Jim Nabors singing "Back Home in Indiana." I don't know how old he is. They had to use a recording of him this year because he was sick and he lives in Hawaii. He couldn't make the trip, but they used his recording. But it's just that's my favorite race of all, and it's always something that keeps me on the edge of my seat the whole time.
And the thing is, for me, I haven't been able to go to a race, but I know that something will happen eventually. But for right now, I just enjoy the fact that people, their heads almost snap when they hear me speaking of IndyCar. But it is then, and I took it really hard when Dan Weldon perished on last year. It's one of those things that really deeply affected me for, I would say, a whole week in some way. That told me a whole lot about
sport. Dan was my favorite driver. Last year he had a tough year because he didn't have a drive, and he got a one-off drive for Indianapolis, which he had won, I think, in 2005, I think it was, or maybe it was 2006.
2005.
Okay, thanks. And then he got this one-off drive, and, you know, in the last corner, the guy in front of him hit the wall, and the guy was way out in front of him. He shouldn't have made the mistake, but he was a rookie, and he slid off the track and hit the wall, and Dan went by and won the race. The only race he ran in last year was the Indy 500 up until Las Vegas, which was the last race of the year, and they had given him a bonus for that race. If he won that, he was going to win $5 million. And unfortunately, tragedy struck, and that didn't happen.
Yes. And again, I just took a pause to remember Dan Weldon. And, oh, wow, it's amazing how quickly 90 minutes go by, and we're right on that hour right now. And is there anything you want to impart with anyone about music or Key West? We're definitely going to be doing this again here really shortly. Is there anything you
want
to share?
I'll definitely be looking forward to it.
All
I have to say is Key West is, for me, Key West is the best place in the world. It's not for everybody. You know, some people You know, if you're grumpy or something like that, it's the wrong place to be. But, you know, it's and I just love Key West to death, and that's what my music is all about. So yeah, that's what I have to say about Key West. Just the best place on earth for me, anyway.
Yes, and in November, you guys are bound to find some pictures of the two of us together. I can't say where it will be. It might be all over the place, but I'm looking forward to shaking hands and doing a live thing there. And
yeah, and it's a small town. It's a small town. I mean, you know, the island itself is, they say, 2 miles. It's actually a little bit less than 2 miles wide by 4 miles long. But the reality of it is the area that we're going to be in is actually maybe a mile square. So it's a small town.
Well, Chris, I'm looking forward to seeing a small town. Are we bringing the pants? And who knows if we'll have a chance to get into wherever Danny Simpson is. But I can tell you, I'm looking most forward to the occasion. We might need to have cameras there because no one's going to believe that I actually made it there. But the very first person I'm going to find when I arrive on the island is Key West Chris.
Cool. And again, if anybody wants to get a hold of me, just go on Facebook, Key West Chris, that's C-H-R-I-S, and don't worry about my last name, it'll pop up. And also you can go to KeyWestChris.com, that's my website.
All right, and that just about does it for this version of Ship to Shore Radio this particular evening. It was Key West Chris along with Captain Frank and Tread, and I'll catch you guys in the archives. Thank you, and have a very good night.
Thanks, Captain.
You're welcome.
You're listening to Ship to Shore Radio. Radio.